Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, on our Capitol Report, we have the latest on the unfolding crisis in Afghanistan, including stepped-up efforts to evacuate Afghan people who helped the U.S. military, as well as American citizens and others seeking safe passage in the wake of a Taliban takeover. Hear concerns raised over the Afghanistan situation, raised by two of our local congressional representatives, Sarah Jacobs and Daryl Issa, and what steps the Biden administration is taking to save lives amid the U.S. troop pullout. Plus, hear how you can help Afghan refugees slated to arrive locally here in San Diego, with at least two local aid groups that are assisting them. Then we'll have a health alert from the FDA warning consumers not to take ivermectin, a drug some people are buying at livestock supply stores meant for horses and cows, but it's dangerous for humans. And some talk show hosts have falsely claimed it can treat or prevent COVID-19. The Metropolitan Water District has issued an alert urging Southern Californians to conserve water in the wake of cutbacks in water allocations to our region due to severe drought conditions, both in Northern California and the Colorado River. A Grossmont High School student lost his life in a car accident over the weekend, which also injured three others, leaving one student in a coma, and we'll have details. Then on Green Scene, hear why residents and environmentalists held a protest at a gas-fired power plant owned by SDG&E in El Cajon that they say is causing health pollution threatening the health of the community. Plus, hear about efforts to revive migratory bird protections that were ended by the Trump administration. Now, if you care about police oversight, there's a vacancy on the County Law Enforcement Review Board for a volunteer in the East County region. Learn how to apply on today's show. From California News Service, we'll have details from the just-released U.S. Census, showing a rise in minorities in our state and what that means for redistricting. California has reimbursed the county for a portion of costs related to the Valley Fire last year, which started in the Hopatool Valley area near Alpine and burned homes as far south as Jamul. In the second half of our show today, on Destination East County, we'll have all the top festivals and events coming up, including a rodeo, parades, a Holy Smokes barbecue, Borrego Days, a farewell concert by the Monkees, a benefit concert to help the homeless, comedy, car shows, and our very own Party in Paradise and Community Champions Awards benefiting East County Magazine, our radio show, and our wildfire alerts, and we hope you'll all join us there on September 25th. From Public News Service, we debut a new feature today called Yonder. It focuses on issues in rural America. Today's episode includes impacts of wildfires on tribal sacred sites, an increase in SNAP benefits, formerly known as food stamps, the rising rate of COVID in some rural areas, and more. Plus, we'll have info on a hotline for parents and young people in California that's become popular during the pandemic, but could be cut in the next budget round. We'll also have some Best of East County episodes today, including an interview with award-winning author Ken Culkin, a road trip to the Campo Old Stone Store, a historic site, and some grilling safety tips. Plus, in honor of National Dog Day, we'll have tips from the San Diego Humane Society on how to adopt a dog, volunteer at a shelter, or become a foster dog parent, and enrich the lives of dogs you may already own. So stay tuned for today's episode of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. San Diego congressional members and residents with ties to Afghanistan have been voicing concerns in the wake of a rapid Taliban takeover in Afghanistan following pullout of most U.S. troops. Chief among the concerns is how to provide safe evacuation for many thousands of Afghans who aided American troops as well as their families, in addition to U.S. citizens, nonprofit workers, journalists, and others still in Afghanistan and at risk of losing their lives to vengeful Taliban forces. But now the pace of evacuations is increasing. The good news is that over 25,000 people have been evacuated from Afghanistan so far, And next, commercial airlines have agreed to allow 18 jetliners to be used to help transport evacuees from neighboring countries to freedom, although the airlines will not be landing in Afghanistan. Additional access points to the airport are also reportedly being added, and President Joe Biden has indicated he will consider keeping troops beyond the August 31st deadline if needed, but only to protect evacuation operations. Biden pledged during his campaign to remove all U.S. troops by the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks on September 11th, which those attacks, back in 2001, prompted President George Bush to launch the Afghanistan invasion targeting Osama bin Laden, mastermind of the 9/11 terrorism attacks in New York and Washington, D.C. During the Obama administration, bin Laden was killed by special forces, but troops remained in Afghanistan during both the Obama and Trump administrations. Donald Trump pledged to withdraw troops and forged an agreement with the Taliban, in which he freed 5,000 Taliban fighters. But Trump did not order the Pentagon to pull out troops nor begin evacuation of Afghan allies during his administration. Biden's actions to withdraw troops in fulfillment of Trump's agreement has led to chaos, including heart-wrenching scenes of Afghan citizens flocking to the Kabul airport, trying desperately to get onto U.S. planes departing the country earlier this month. When 640 or so evacuees crammed into a C-17 U.S. aircraft and evacuated, as well as other aircraft, TV news reports revealed that several clung to wings of the aircraft and fell to their deaths. Another was found dead in the wheel well of a U.S. plane. While protests against the Taliban have erupted in several Afghan cities, the Taliban has responded with brutality, firing into a crowd of protesters in at least one instance. Biden has indicated surprise over the speed at which the Taliban regained power, even before the U.S. troop pullouts was complete. He drew criticism for an ABC interview with George Stephanopoulos, in which he stood by his decision, largely blaming Afghanistan's president for fleeing the country and failing to pay Afghan troops who refused to fight. An article in GovExec indicates the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction warned for years about ghost soldiers listed who did not exist due to Afghan leaders' corruption. The 20-year war has cost over $2 trillion, Associated Press reports. According to AP, the war has killed over 2,400 U.S. military members through April, as well as more than 3,800 U.S. contractors, over 1,100 Allied service members, including NATO forces, 444 aid workers, and 72 journalists. Casualties on the Afghan side were even higher. An estimated 66,000 Afghan military and police officers died, as well as some 47,000 Afghan civilians and 51,000 Taliban members and other opposition fighters. But the U.S.-led invasion also led to increased human rights for women, rights that are swiftly being taken away as extremist Taliban forces last in control from 1996 to 2001, before the U.S. invasion, regained power with stunning rapidity in the last 2 weeks, raising additional concerns among human rights advocates for the fate of women, especially those advocating for women's rights. Taliban leadership has pledged a return to Sharia law, and despite promises to include women in a new Taliban-run government, Taliban forces are reportedly going door-to-door in some areas, capturing or executing those who helped Americans or have been outspoken in advocating for women's rights or human rights. San Diego's Republican Congressman Daryl Issa has been sharply critical of Biden's actions. Issa, a senior member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, issued a statement demanding Biden answer critical questions about his so-called leadership failures in Afghanistan and why a coherent plan for success appears not to have been formulated. Specifically, Issa asked why intelligence assessments were so wrong when the U.S. promised the U.S. promised the Taliban in exchange for being able to extract Americans, what withdrawal signals to our allies, and more. Issa also called on Speaker Pelosi to reconvene Congress to hear testimony and conduct oversight on the collapse of Afghanistan. However, even Issa agrees that America eventually had to leave Afghanistan, but he says it should have been on America's terms, not the Taliban's. San Diego Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs, a Democrat and member of the House Armed Services and House Foreign Affairs Committees, authored a letter signed by 47 House members also seeking answers on the Biden administration's plan to evacuate U.S. citizens, Afghan allies and their families, women, nonprofit workers, journalists, and others. Her letter states, "It is this administration's moral obligation to leverage all available resources to help as many people as possible to safety in the U.S. There is no time to waste." Jacobs had earlier raised concerns over safety of Afghan allies in letters to the White House in April and again in June. She pledged cooperation of her office to aid constituents seeking help for people left behind in Afghanistan. Her letter asked questions including how the State and Defense Departments are defining who's at risk, whether women's rights activists will be granted protection, how people eligible for evacuation are being notified, how airport security can be provided, and what resources the administration needs to expedite evacuations of Americans, Afghan allies, and other vulnerable individuals. Jacobs, in a press release, agrees with not keeping troops on the ground forever in Afghanistan and supports withdrawal, but adds, "The priority right now has to be evacuating as many people as possible, as quickly as possible. The White House needs to cut the red tape, work with us in Congress, and do everything we can to get those fearing for their lives out of harm's way." Now, in San Diego on August 19th, a candlelight vigil in Balboa Park drew demonstrators standing in solidarity with innocent lives lost in Afghanistan. Those present included Dilquaz Ahmed, an El Cajon human rights advocate and winner of a humanitarian award from the United Nations San Diego chapter. She called for respect for women in Afghanistan. Amanda Matty, a U.S. military veteran, an author who resides in East County, has warned on Facebook that scammers are promising U.S. visas or evacuation from Afghanistan for a fee. She warned not to be fooled by the scammers. She posted the federal government's legitimate links for those seeking help, which are through encrypted channels. And by the way, we've posted those in our article on the Afghan pullout on eastcountymagazine.org. Matty also warns those in Afghanistan who may be in danger not to try and get to the airport, but to shelter in place and await a call or email after submitting an application for a special immigrant visa. She further warns those at risk to delete social media history of anything connecting them to the U.S. and to hide green cards, passports, and other documents. She suggests taking photos of key documents that prove work for the U.S. military American companies, sending copies to a trusted person outside of Afghanistan, and then deleting them off the phone and burying or burning originals to avoid having them fall into Taliban hands. Now, many of the evacuees coming to the U.S. are destined for San Diego, which already has a large Afghan population. Local aid agencies, including the International Rescue Committee's San Diego chapter and Jewish Family Services, are already gearing up to help the new arrivals, and they are accepting donations as well as seeking host families to aid local Afghan refugees. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Rath.
This is Mitchell Murphy with a health alert. A Mississippi Poison Control Center reports that 70% of recent calls are from people who ingested ivermectin purchased at livestock supply stores, which they mistakenly believed could treat or prevent COVID-19, a view falsely touted by multiple Fox News hosts. Seeking to protect the public from harm, the U.S. FDA has issued a statement titled, "Why You Should Not Use Ivermectin to Treat or Prevent COVID-19. The statement makes clear taking large doses of this drug is dangerous and could cause serious harm. The FDA also confirms that ivermectin is not an antiviral and is used primarily for treatment of worms or other parasites in livestock such as cows or horses, though it is used occasionally prescribed in much smaller doses for humans with head lice or skin conditions. The drug can interfere with blood thinners or other medications, may cause nausea or vomiting, and overdose can lead to coma, seizures, or death. The FDA tweeted this blunt message for consumers. You are not a horse. You are not a cow. Serious, y'all. Stop it. The FDA has received multiple reports of patients hospitalized after self-medicating with ivermectin intended for horses. The agency has not approved ivermectin for use in treating or preventing COVID-19. Never use medications intended for animals on yourself, the FDA cautions. Since dosages are for large animals that may weigh a ton or more, doses that can be highly toxic or even deadly in humans. The best ways to prevent the spread of COVID-19 are to wear masks, stay at least 6 feet away from others who don't live with you, wash hands frequently, avoid crowds, and get vaccinated. Since nearly all recent hospitalizations of COVID-19 patients nationwide are people who did not get the vaccine.
In response to the extreme drought conditions impacting Southern California, the Metropolitan Water District, or MWD's, Board of Directors has declared a water supply alert, calling for consumers and businesses to voluntarily reduce their water use and help preserve the region's storage reserves. The declaration comes after the Bureau of Reclamation declared a first-ever shortage of Colorado River water, which normally provides about 25% of Southern California's water needs. The board's action urges residents, businesses, and agencies in MWD's service area, including San Diego County, to lower the region's water demand to stave off more severe actions in the future, which could include restricting water supplies to its 26 member agencies or raising rates. San Diego County Water Authority Board Chairman Gary Croucher issued this statement: "Declining water availability on the Colorado River and worsening drought conditions statewide underscores the importance of collective actions to ensure reliable water supplies not only for today, but for next year and for future generations." Now, he says, thankfully, San Diego's region has prepared, and we do have adequate water supplies for right now, but the water agencies are working with partners at the regional, state, and federal levels to advance water management solutions for the Southwest. Croucher says the quickest way to help defeat drought is to eliminate water waste at homes and businesses, and we stand with MWD and Governor Newsom in supporting voluntary water use efficiencies. Consumers should start by checking irrigation systems for leaks and repairing them quickly. Keep chilled water in the fridge instead of running the tap to let it cool down. Limit showers to 5 minutes or less, and apply some mulch around plants to reduce evaporation. Metropolitan Water's board chairman, Gloria Gray, says Southern Californians have done an extraordinary job reducing their water use, which has helped us build up our stored reserves for times like these. But now we're relying on our storage to get us through this exceptionally dry year, and we don't know what next year will bring. With 50 of California's 58 counties now under a state emergency proclamation, it's critical that residents heed the governor's water-saving call to address the crisis. General Manager of MWD, Adele Haga-Khalil, says, "A water supply alert is the third of four conditions in MWD's framework, indicating the urgency of Southern California's need to save water. The action calls for water agencies to reduce their water demand through public awareness campaigns and by adopting measures tailored to local conditions. Examples of measures that could be taken include banning washing cars at home or filling outdoor water features. Or, as we said before, should a fourth stage alert become necessary, that could mean rationing water allocations or hiking rates." More than half of the water used in Southern California is imported from the Northern Sierra and the Colorado River. Both of these sources are facing severe drought conditions. Crucial storage reservoirs in both systems have never been lower. Earlier this year, the California Department of Water Resources slashed its allocation of supplies delivered on the State Water Project from 10% to just 5% of normal, tying the lowest on record. That means MWD is receiving only about a one-month supply of its Northern California water supplies for the whole year. If dry conditions continue, next year's allocation could be zero. On the Colorado River, Reclamation's shortage declaration triggers cutbacks for Arizona and Nevada next year due to dire conditions. Haga-Khalil says, "The reality is that climate change will accelerate these challenges, which will require us to think differently and innovate ways to adapt. We must build on our progress in conservation and double down on our investment in local water supplies, including recycled water and storm water." You can find tips to save water at bewaterwise.com. And you can find rebates for buying more efficient appliances or converting grass lawns to native plant gardens, along with other information, at watersmartsd.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM from Descanso.
A senior at Grosswaught High School died early Saturday morning, August 21st, when the Honda Civic he was driving crashed into a light pole at the corner of Fletcher Parkway and Navajo Road in El Cajon. Three passengers suffered serious injuries, including two 11th grade students, also from Grosswaught High. Names of the victims have not been released as of our show taping deadline. Grosswaught Union High School District issued a statement which says, "As our school community begins to deal with this tragedy, our district will be providing additional grief support on campus at Grosswaught High School." Lieutenant Darren Foster with El Cajon Police says officers and firefighter paramedics responded to the crash shortly after 2 a.m. and found four people trapped in the vehicle. The driver was pronounced dead at the scene. The three passengers were freed from the wreckage and transported to hospitals. According to Lieutenant Foster, the preliminary investigation found the Civic's driver was traveling at a high rate of speed on Navajo Road when he lost control and struck the light pole. The El Cajon Police Department is asking anyone with information regarding this collision to call 619-579-3311. The department also reminds motorists to make sure that all passengers are wearing seatbelts and to obey all traffic and speed laws to help save lives. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Mitchell Murphy.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on that story. The student who died in that crash has been identified as Gady Cruz, and one of the other passengers who was seriously injured is Giovanni Solorio Roman. His mother told NBC News that he is in a coma. The other two passengers have not been identified, and our hearts and thoughts certainly go out to the students' families and classmates.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Mitchell Murphy with the Green Scene Report. Environmental activists led by SD350 held a march with dozens of activists on Saturday, August 21st, to protest SDG&E's Cuyamaca gas-fired power plant in El Cajon. Roger Kopic, an East County resident and climate change activist who participated in the protest, says, "It is long past the time that methane burning like this was replaced by batteries and a diverse source mix." Organizers say the SDG&E's facility pollutes surrounding communities, contributes to the climate crisis with gas sourcing by fracking. They called SDG&E to stop polluting East County communities and switch to renewable alternatives. The event included speakers for environmental and racial justice groups, as well as a doctor who confounded San Diego Pediatricians for Clean Air. A press release for the event states, "Polluting nitrogen oxides for this plant exposed residents to asthma and other health impacts in a disadvantaged community. This plant also relies on dirty energy, contributing to devastating climate change effects like drought and wildfires, fracking our future." Residents from El Cajon, San Diego, and other communities called on SEMPRA, which owns SDG&E, to not renew the permit for the El Cajon power plant and to replace peaker plants with safe, renewable local solar energy and battery storage. SDG&E has made a major push to invest in clean energy alternatives such as wind and solar, purchasing power from several renewable energy projects in this region. But the utility also continues to operate peaker plants powered by fossil fuels.
Conservation groups are pushing for passage of a bill in Congress that would revive migratory bird protections that were dropped during the Trump administration. Last year, Trump's Fish and Wildlife Service lifted a rule that said companies that kill birds in the course of business, called an incidental take, would have to change their practices and or pay for habitat restoration somewhere else. Jason Rylander with Defenders of Wildlife says the Migratory Bird Protection Act of 2021 would reinstate those requirements and not a moment too soon.
In North America since 1970, we've lost more than 3 billion birds. And so every legal protection that we have to help protect migratory bird populations is essential.
The biggest incidental bird kill in recent years happened after the Deepwater Horizon oil spill in 2010, when BP was forced to pay $100 million for killing more than a million birds. Examples of other operations that can kill birds include windmills, solar farms, oil-covered pit lakes, and water contaminated by tailings from mining sites. Rylander would like the Biden administration to create a new permit system to protect birds and give companies regulatory certainty.
And then the Fish and Wildlife Service would have the opportunity to use its expertise to ensure that project, if it moves forward, does so in the most environmentally sensitive manner.
The Biden administration has started the process of lifting the rule administratively, but the bill, House Resolution 4833, would make it harder for any future administration to give business a free pass to kill birds. This is Suzanne Potter for California News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators for transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The County of San Diego Citizens Law Enforcement Review Board is looking for an additional volunteer member to fill an opening. The vacancy is in Supervisorial District 2, the district represented by Joel Anderson, and it includes most of East County. The review board was established in 1990 to investigate citizen complaints against county sheriff's deputies and probation officers. The board also investigates deaths in connection with the actions of sworn deputies or probation officers. The review board makes advisory findings on complaints and recommends policy and procedure changes to the sheriff, chief probation officer, and the Board of Supervisors. Applicants must be a registered voter in San Diego County, cannot be a county employee or affiliated with the county, and cannot currently hold a position as a sworn law enforcement officer. Members serve a 3-year term for no more than 2 consecutive full terms and should attend 1 Citizens Law Enforcement Review Board meeting before applying to the vacancy. A training course is also required within 3 months of the appointment. The clerk of the Board of Supervisors will accept applications up until the September 15th deadline. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
New census data shows California is the second most diverse state in the nation behind Hawaii, and that has big implications for new legislative districts that will be drawn over the next few months. The California Citizens Redistricting Commission took over the map-making duties from the legislature after the 2010 census, so this is their second go-around. Cathay Fang with Common Cause says the goal is to create fair political district maps that allow voters to choose their politicians and not the other way around.
The lines are no longer tied to where incumbents live or partisan bases. They're tied to where those populations are growing. And so we may see significant shifts in the way the lines are, purely based on those demographic changes.
In the past, lawmakers tended to draw districts that protected incumbents and diluted the voting power of communities of color by packing them into one district or spreading them out into multiple districts. Now, nonprofits such as All on the Line are prepping community groups to speak out with a program called Redistricting You that holds its next online class tomorrow night. The Citizens Redistricting Commission already has started taking public testimony and has many hearings coming up. The schedule is online at WeDrawTheLinesCA.org. Fang encourages everyday citizens to get involved in the process.
You do not need to be an expert at redistricting. If you can say, here's where we're at, here are the issues that we care about, that is what the commission needs to hear.
The census data showed that no one ethnic group forms a majority in the state. The Latino population in California has gone up by more than 11% since 2010. The state is now roughly 41% white, 39% Latino, 15% Asian, and less than 6% black. This is Suzanne Potter for California News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The California Governor's Office of Emergency Services has approved more than $21,000 in reimbursements to help the County of San Diego cover the costs of operating at Local Assistance Center, which served 127 displaced residents during the last year's Valley Fire, as well as the cost to replace 5 road signs damaged in the blaze. The Valley Fire started in Hapatul area near Alpine and burned 20 residential structures as far south as Jamul. The reimbursements represent the state's 75% share of the county's costs for work eligible under the California Disaster Assistance Act following California Governor Gavin Newsom's State of Emergency Proclamation on September 26, 2020. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Mitchell Murphy.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part 2 of the East County Magazine radio show.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM from Descanso.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org. Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery with Destination East County. This week's destination features Lakeside's Rodeo and Western Days Parade, a concert to benefit the homeless in El Cajon, a concert by Fred Benedetti and Julian, and the Holy Smokes Barbecue in Descanso. Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including our very own Party in Paradise and Community Champion Awards with East County Magazine on September 25th in Jamul at the Jamul Casino, the Monkees Farewell Concert in El Cajon, Laurel and Hardy Comedy in Spring Valley, and the Borrego Days Desert Festival, as well as outdoor concerts and car shows, plus movies and county parks all summer long. The 57th Annual Lakeside Rodeo returns August 27th through 29th at the Lakeside Rodeo Arena. The event features bull riding, barrel racing, a rodeo clown, and more. Lakeside's Rodeo benefits children's groups in the Lakeside community, and you can get more information at lakesiderodeo.com. The 56th Annual Lakeside Western Days Parade on Saturday, August 28th will feature the theme Thank You, Healthcare Workers. The parade steps off at 9:30 a.m. from the corner of Winter Gardens Boulevard and Woodside Avenue. For more information, you can visit lakesidechamber.org. The Magnolia Center in El Cajon will host a concert August 28th from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. to benefit the East County Transitional Living Center that helps homeless individuals and families. An evening with Mayor Wells will feature El Cajon's own Mayor Bill Wells, a talented musician and his friends providing live musical entertainment. A silent auction and painting demonstration will also be held, and tickets are available at MagnoliaSanDiego.com. Friends of the Julian Library continue their Music on the Mountain concert series with guitarist Fred Benedetti. Born in Japan, Benedetti began playing guitar at age 9 and is now a chair of guitar studies and associate professor of music at Grossmont College. The concert will be on Friday, September 3rd at 3 p.m. in the Julian Library. On Sunday, September 5th, Our Lady of Light Catholic Parish in Descanso invites you to their 84th annual Deep Pit Barbecue, called the Holy Smokes Barbecue. It includes deep pit barbecued beef with all the fixings, as well as ice cream and cobbler desserts. Beer and soda are also available. Bring your dancing boots or shoes, because the Whiskey Ridge Band will provide music. There are also crafts and games for kids, raffles, and vendors. For more information, you can visit ourladyoflight.church. East County Magazine invites you to don your tropical attire and join us at our Party in Paradise on Saturday evening, September 25th, where we will also present Community Champions Awards to honor outstanding community members. The event will be held atop the new rooftop deck in the Jamul Casino, with panoramic 360-degree views, shade, and a dance floor. Guests can enjoy a cocktail party, tropical dinner, live music by Slack Key Ohana, raffle, and silent auction. All proceeds benefit East County Media, supporting East County Magazine, our radio show, East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts, and our Community Champions Awards. To protect the safety of guests, proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test is required. Tickets are available at eastcountymagazine.org. Early bird rates are available through the end of August for the September 25th event, and the deadline to RSVP is 2 weeks in advance. The Monkees will be live in concert on September 18th at the Magnolia Performing Arts Center in El Cajon. The performance is their farewell tour. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame band still includes two of its original members, Mickey DeLenz and Michael Nesmith. Their hit songs include I'm a Believer and many more. Tickets are available at MagnoliaSanDiego.com. SAPS at Sea, the San Diego chapter of the Sons of the Desert, the official Laurel and Hardy Appreciation Society, has resumed meetings, with the next one slated for September 18th at 7 p.m. at Trinity Presbyterian Church in Spring Valley. The evening kicks off with Me and My Pal, a 1933 film in which Ollie is getting married. September's guest comedians are the Little Rascals in one of their most popular shorts, School's Out. After intermission, more laughs are in store with A Chump at Oxford and the cartoon Blackboard Jumble in honor of back-to-school season. For more info, you can visit the Saps at Sea Facebook page. The 55th Annual Borrego Days Desert Festival will take place October 23rd and 24th at Christmas Circle Community Park on Palm Canyon Drive in Borrego Springs. Hours are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday and 10 to 3 on Sunday. The festive weekend includes a flyover, parade, live entertainment, dance floor, art exhibits, kids zone, food vendors, adult beer garden, car show, amateur talent show, and more. This year's theme is Welcome Back, according to the event's sponsor, the Borrego Springs Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau. For more information on Borrego Days, you can visit borregodays.com. El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert Summer Series continues every Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. now through October. The concerts are in Prescott Promenade Park on Main Street in downtown El Cajon. You can bring a picnic or come early to dine at one of the restaurants nearby. In addition, El Cajon's Classic Car Nights are back every Wednesday evening at Prescott Promenade all summer long. You can find a full list of concert performers and car show themes at downtownelcajon.com. San Diego's Summer Movies in the Park are back with options for live viewings in parks across San Diego County, as well as options for viewings from cars at some locations and several online showings as well. You can get a full list of the movies at summermoviesinthepark.com. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
From the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. With scores of large fires already burning in the U.S., weather conditions through next month aren't likely to help. Don Gentry leads the Klamath Tribes near the now-contained Bootleg Fire in Oregon. It burned 400,000 acres, destroyed hundreds of homes and buildings, burned cars, and engulfed sacred lands in flames.
This is an important place, and it is emotional visiting these areas and seeing how significantly they've changed.
Gentry says the fires are renewing efforts to protect Native communities and their traditions.
Many of us, even though it's a modern day and age, we still hunt and share the bounty of our hunting.
Good news for rural families struggling to put food on the table. The long-awaited USDA review of SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, means $36 a month extra for each person. Money that will ripple through local communities. Republican lawmakers have expressed concerns, though it was a then-Republican-led Congress that mandated the review in the 2018 Farm Bill. Two-thirds of rural U.S. counties are battling the coronavirus Delta variant this week, and about half of those are seeing a slowdown in vaccination rates over the last couple weeks. Tim Mirima with the Daily Yonder keeps a close watch on the latest numbers.
Even though the rise in cases seems to be causing people to want to roll up their sleeves, there's already some evidence that that's flagging.
Mirima adds, deaths in rural counties are climbing in relation to the increased rate of infections. At the same time, assisted living facilities, especially those in rural areas, are facing closure because they haven't received promised funds from the CARES Act. Maggie Elowaney with Argentum, a nonprofit that represents the interests of long-term care facilities, says getting equal health funding for rural America is always a challenge.
20% of this country's population lives in rural America, yet they're scattered over 95% of the landmass.
She adds pandemic funds for assisted living facilities were supposed to be released 7 months ago. Josh Asfig with AARP North Dakota says it's critical to keep vulnerable populations safe.
What's concerning right now is as new variants are emerging, facilities cannot let preventable problems be repeated.
Meanwhile, doctors in training to work in underserved communities at the nation's first tribally affiliated medical school have started the second year of classes.
They're able to get direct feedback, allowing them to develop into empathetic, holistic providers.
That's Natasha Bray, interim dean of the Oklahoma State University College of Osteopathic Medicine. She says the Tahlequah, Oklahoma facility in the heart of the Cherokee Nation features state-of-the-art lecture halls to facilitate distance learning.
That allows them to see lectures, whether they're occurring on the Tulsa campus or locally here in Tahlequah.
For the Yonder Report and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.
More than 10,000 people have called the California Parent and Youth Helpline during the pandemic so far, but the funding is set to run out in December. The helpline operates from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., 7 days a week, so people can speak to a trained counselor about things such as parental anxiety, kids' mental health struggles, and conflict between parents over the best way to help their kids. Arizona State University professor Elizabeth Harris analyzed all calls more than 10 minutes in length and found that the helpline is an important release valve.
When people are at a point of acute frustration with their children, they cannot wait weeks until they get in to see a therapist. They need to be able to pick up the phone and get help right now. And that's what a helpline does.
The helpline number is 855-4-A-PARENT. And the live chat and support groups are at caparentyouthhelpline.org. The service started at the beginning of the pandemic and will shut down at the end of the year unless the state of California extends its funding. Dr. Lisa Payan-Berlin, president of Parents Anonymous, says counselors reassure parents that they can build their resilience and help their children.
The therapeutic techniques we're using help people address those underlying emotional issues so people can change behavior, so people can deal immediately with what's going on.
A recent separate study in the journal Child and Health Services Review, co-authored by Harris, found that parents who call the helpline or participate in a Parents Anonymous support group are much less likely to be accused or convicted of child abuse or neglect. This is Suzanne Potter for California News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators for transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM from Descanso.
And next up, since our host is just returning from vacation this week, we're going to be playing a couple of Best of East County segments, starting with an interview with award-winning author Ken Culkin.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Ken Culkin. My guest is an award-winning author of 10 books and recipient of a National Endowment of the Arts Fellowship. Ken's writing has also appeared in dozens of magazines, including Esquire, Best American Short Stories, and the San Diego Reader. Welcome, Ken. It's a pleasure to see you.
Hello. It's nice to be here.
Ken, you have a long history of writing everything from columns to short stories to your own novels, as well as mysteries co-authored with local writer Alan Russell. Which projects would you say that you enjoy the most and why?
The biggest amount of time that I've spent, and so I just enjoy writing. So my primary project over the years, for about the last 20 years actually, has been a series that began with a book called The Loud Adios. That's A-D-I-O-S, like in Spanish, only usually the accent mark is left off by mistake. From there, it just sort of transformed itself into a series in which I am able to explore this character, this Tom Hickey fellow, all the way from his childhood all the way until he is a very old man, and also his family, his son and his adopted son and his two wives and other historical characters all factor into different novels. And so I get to explore these characters, and they grow in my mind, and my knowledge about the historical characters grow a lot. So I just get a kick out of learning about the history of California, which is where they're all set, over the 20th century. And I just love dealing with the characters and the history.
So you're learning more about the real world and the world you created.
Both, yeah. I'm not sure that they're different, but sometimes they run together.
They merge.
Yes.
Your book, In Writing and the Spirit, offers guidance and inspiration to other writers. What would you say is your main advice, and have you received any feedback from the San Diego writing community about it?
My main advice is to read the book, because there's a whole lot of stuff in there, and I can't say that any one piece of advice is right for everybody by any means, because the feedback that I've gotten, and I certainly have gotten quite a bit from San Diego and elsewhere, is that this part really spoke to me. It's a sort of a series of meditations, just a couple of pages long, that offer, you know, different insights into the subject of mostly about inspiration and how we can get inspired, and how we can open our minds and free our minds and be ready to listen to the muse or the spirit or whatever we want to call it.
What inspires you? How do you listen to the muse?
The example that comes most readily to mind this morning, I get a lot of ideas in the bathtub, actually.
Oh.
Yeah. Which is why I generally take baths instead of showers. And also on walks. But this morning I realized there's a character named Leslie White, who was an actual detective investigator for the Los Angeles District Attorney's Office. And he just plays a very bit part because I wanted to get in some information. And he was a good guy to give this information.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have another character that I have been wondering what to do with. He's somebody that's following Tom Hickey throughout the novel and sometimes following his sister, Florence. So I didn't know who he was following and why he was doing this. And so I hadn't dealt with that yet. But it occurred to me this morning that he's following him at the behest of this fellow, Leslie White. So although Tom, well, I'm not going to go into what happens beyond that because I would give some stuff away. I don't want to. But the one thing led to another. The character led me to Leslie White, which led me to the reason why this guy is following him. And it opened up some distinct possibilities that could answer some questions about some thorny problems that I still have to solve in the novel.
So it's like unraveling a ball of string.
Mm-hmm. And it all fell together in about 10 different pieces from one particular idea.
What fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, going back to the mysteries that you co-authored with Alan Russell, I know they have the intriguing titles of Roadkill and No Cats, No Chocolate, and that they're about the madness of book tours. Is there a story behind the story? I mean, are book tours really mad?
Well, book tours are mad when Alan and I are on them. I'm not sure that everybody else is quite as mad as we are, but we're both pretty ornery, and we like to argue. And and if anything is tedious, then our imaginations spring to life, and no telling what could happen. So they're very mad. But a story that I like to tell is when the title, No Cats, No Chocolate, came from a book signing we were doing. It was in Boulder, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And the bookseller said, hey, would you guys like to make some money, big money? And we said, well, yeah, you know, we're not, we you know, yeah. And he said, write a book called The Cat Who Would Die for Chocolate, because cats and chocolate were big in the mystery genre at the time. Well, Alan and I thought of ourselves as a step above writers who would capitalize on such mundane stuff as mm-hmm. chocolate and cats. And we didn't see ourselves as commercial as all that. So we decided to write this book and go the absolute opposite way and call it No Cats, No Chocolate. Now, recently, it was quite a bestseller on Amazon in the ebook. We were number one in the Oprah category.
Wow.
and in the Midwest travel and in the West Coast travel, because we're on our way to be on Oprah in one of the books, and then No Cats, No Chocolate. So what we did when we were promoting the book is we asked a bunch of writer friends to write the nastiest comments they could possibly write about us. And so they did. So we have a lot of famous writers that are saying just awful things about how degraded and what reprobates we are. So when a lot of people started reading that book, I got notes from friends that were just lamenting the fact that these people would have such awful things to say about us. So I really got a kick out of that because I had not realized that anybody was quite capable of thinking that an author, if they got comments like that, would actually put it in their book. So I was baffled and a bit chagrined by the fact that I think I don't know as much about the human mind as I thought I did before that, if they're capable of making that mistake. So.
Well, it sounds like you have a great time overall with this.
I do. I love it.
So, last question. What is your next writing project, and when do you think we'll see it?
Well, I'm hoping it'll be out in spring with Poison Pen Press. It's called The Good Know Nothing, and it's the second chronologically and the seventh actual book of the Hickey family series that I mentioned. It involves the Sundance Kid and Tom Hickey, of course, and it's set in 1936, right during mm-hmm. the Nazi Olympics. It also features B. Traven, that wrote The Treasure of Sierra Madre, and Wade Randolph Hearst and Marion Davies. And there's some other celebrity. Amy mm-hmm. Semple McPherson factors into it, the old-time preacher. So I'm just having fun. And now that I've solved these things that I solved this morning because of that one idea leading to others, I should be done with it sometime in July, and it should come out next spring.
Okay, well, we look forward to seeing it. Our time is up, Ken, but thanks again for joining us. For more information on Ken Culkin, and that's K-U-H-L-K-E-N, please visit his website at www.kenculkin.net. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you've been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
Thank you.
Next up from County News Service, we're going to be hearing from Larry Johnson out at the old Campo Stone Store, one of East County's most unique and colorful historical landmarks.
If you're ever on Highway 94, about an hour east of San Diego, you might see this unique building.
Welcome to Historic Campo and the Gaskell Brothers Stone Store Museum.
The Gaskell Brothers built a fortress-like stone store in 1885. Previously, it was a wooden structure, the site of a famous shootout.
A group of bandits had been raiding down the coast of California, so gunfire started. And there was a big shootout. The guy that they had shot on the floor, one of the Gaskell brothers, didn't kill him. He jumped up, grabbed a shotgun, went out and shot people. And so they were shooting dead blank range around. And both Gaskell brothers were wounded. The locals were afraid of another raid. They couldn't get the military up here to guard and protect them. So they thought they needed a substantial building. So that's why they decided to build a building as thick as this and as strong as this. If you take a look around, if you come in, you'll see that the walls down here are about 4 foot thick. It's from stone that was quarried here on site by hand with hammer and drill and no backhoes or heavy lifting objects. It was manpower. It served as a store from 1885 until about 1927.
No longer a store, this building is now a museum, thanks to County Parks and the Mountain Empire Historical Society. Today, the store reflects the early life of the town of Campo.
When the Historical Society began, they tried to make it look a lot like it did in 1899, or when it was a store functioning to serve the local public. So they have gathered some of the food stuff, the tobaccos, the medical supplies, the ropes, the cans, anything that the ranchers needed. If they didn't have it, you didn't need it.
The building is filled with photos, books, artifacts from the Kumeyaay Indians who occupied the region prior to the settlers, and other rare items.
These shackles were found locally about 3 miles from here on a ranch in about 1885. A person who's bought the ranch found in the well the skeleton. On the skeleton, on the legs, were these shackles. They didn't know who the body was or who the skeleton was. It's still a mystery today. One of the interesting things about these shackles is they're blacksmith made. There's no lock to them. Once they were on, they were meant to stay.
Upstairs is an impressive exhibit dedicated to Campo's military history, including Camp Lockett.
Camp Lockett was started before the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. I guess the military was anticipating that there was going to be a war, and they needed another base here, and they needed a base in this area because of the railroad, which was a key supply line. We had a long exposed border, and one of the things they were afraid of was that if the Japanese came into the war, they might invade Mexico and come into San Diego. So this was sort of a critical point, and so they started building Camp Lockett.
The 10th Cavalry is one you may have heard of.
The famed Buffalo Soldiers, white officers and then African-American enlisted troops. And they were stationed here, and they were guarding tunnels and railroad and the border. Very tough, very good soldiers.
The museum is open on weekends, making for a nice day trip to learn about our local pioneers.
They were entrepreneurs, every one of them. They were constantly trying to figure out how to make the best of what they had and where they were, and to make a living and to leave history and substantial items behind them so that descendants would have something to live and work on and hopefully try and take care of.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from the San Diego Humane Society. Since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, over 18,000 animals have been adopted from the San Diego Humane Society. While those animals are enjoying life in their new homes, there are still millions in shelters across the county, and plenty of them here in San Diego, who are still waiting for a second chance. National Dog Day on August 26th shines a spotlight on these deserving pets who are ready to become part of a family. Here in San Diego County alone, up to 20,000 homeless dogs enter shelters annually. Here are some ways that you can help these furry friends. Adopt the dog to enrich your life by visiting sdhumane.org/adopt to view adoptable pets online or come visit in person. Donate funds, blankets, toys, and food to make shelter stays more comfortable for pets while they await adoption. Consider fostering a pet or volunteer at your local shelter. And if you already have a dog, keep your pet safe by microchipping and having a collar tag and license in case your dog gets lost. Sign up for a dog training class. And during summer's heat, make sure your dog has plenty of water. Don't leave the pet in a vehicle and avoid hiking with your dog during excessive heat. Remember, the best treat in the world for a dog is a human companion. This is what makes National Dog Day the perfect time to find a new four-legged companion or add an extra touch of love to a dog's life, whether in a shelter or in your own home.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM from Descanso.
This is Ed Barreno with East County Magazine on KNSJ with some grilling safety tips. July, August, and right into Labor Day, we use our barbecue grills more than any other months. Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna, East County Magazine's in-house fire chief and columnist, says that firefighters respond to many structure and wild land fires that involve barbecues around this time of year. He adds, quote, "We also treat many victims for injuries related to barbecues. Barbecue safety means sending the right smoke signal, and that signal is safety," unquote. While gas grills contribute to a higher number of home fires than their charcoal counterparts, all grills pose a risk for fires and burns. Grills should be placed well away from the home and decks, far from under the eaves or overhanging branches and vegetation. Other grilling safety tips from the National Fire Protection Association are as follows. 1. Propane and charcoal grills should only be used outdoors. 2. Keep children and pets at least 3 feet away from the grilling area. 3. Keep your grill clean by removing grease or fat buildup from the grills and in trays below the grill. 4. Never leave your grill unattended. Always make sure your gas grill lid is open before igniting it. 5. If you smell gas while cooking, immediately get away from the grill and call the fire department. Do not move the grill. If the flame goes out, turn the grill and gas off and wait at least 15 minutes before relighting it. 6. When using a starter fluid, use only charcoal starter fluid. Never add any other flammable liquids to the fire. Keep charcoal fluid out of the reach of children and away from heat sources. When you are finished grilling, let the coals completely cool before disposing of them in a metal container. And finally, use common sense and grill safely.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.